Welcome to Trax Cultures. I'm Mike Piccinato, your host. This podcast unravels the intricacies of transitions across cultures. For those feeling the pull of change or supporting loved ones through it, this podcast is for you. We understand the uncertainty and excitement that come with such transitions, and together we'll explore how to adapt while maintaining community and belonging. Throughout our episodes, we'll draw on insights from the Cross-Cultural Transition Handbook by Dr. Stephen W. Jones. Whether you're moving to a new place or supporting someone who is, this podcast offers encouragement and connection. Enjoy the conversations as we navigate the challenges and joys of cross-cultural transitions together. This is episode 22 of season one of Trax Cultures. This is a legacy podcast from Unterwegs, the En Route podcast, being re-released here as we build a focused channel for our conversations about transitions across cultures. The original episode was released on June 15th, 2022. My guests today will be Dr. Stephen and Jenny Jones. We're going back to the series we started a couple of weeks ago, finishing up the interview about language learning and the impact language learning has on cultural transitions and the impact it has really on all of our lives as we settle into a new place. Well, Stephen and Jenny, welcome back.
Thanks.
We left the last conversation finishing talking about kind of different approaches to language learning and talking about just how language is really complex. And we're still circling back around to where you guys are at in the language learning process. And you finished your time with the very focused, more verbal language learning time where it was you guys, the two of you, and the teacher. And now you guys are in more of a traditional classroom setting.
Yeah, and I think the interesting part for me in that is like how I viewed the at the end of our time with our just Stephen and I and a teacher, it was very much like, oh, we're having tea with Helmut today. It felt very comfortable, very predictable, even though there was a lot of conversation, it felt more normal to me. And then when we decided to make the change, the contract was coming to an end and we were trying something different and moving more into a traditional classroom setting, which in my brain sounds good. But then I felt all of this anxiety of like starting a new thing. Well, what are their patterns? What are their expectations? Will I really understand everything I think I understand? I mean, we had to take a placement test and I felt pretty confident about where it ended up placing me. But just that change back to something that I thought would be good, now all of a sudden that felt like the bad guy. That classroom environment, which I thought would be like more of my jam. I don't know the right word. Yeah, where it felt like that would be where I was more comfortable, all of a sudden felt very uncomfortable and in a situation that I felt like I would be really uncomfortable with just a lot of speaking, that was feeling very comfy and cozy and normal.
It was interesting. So we had 6 months of the 2 days a week of basically 2 hours each time with this conversation practice. And then the seventh month was that except 4 days a week. And so it really had become very comfortable and fun. Like we enjoyed our docent, the teacher really enjoyed being with him. And
he was from a different part of Germany. So he brought in a different perspective, mm-hmm. But he had been living in Berlin for a while. So it was interesting, his observations. It felt like he was just, it was a very fun cultural learning mm-hmm. piece as well.
In one of our last class periods, we went for a walk with him around the neighborhood and, you know, just really fun things. And we've continued to interact with him a bit. Yeah, then moving into the class, I think for me, the placement test was a little, like I felt a bit vulnerable doing that because I really didn't have a good sense. We had done one kind of progress test early on at the other school and it was very, super discouraging when we took it. And yeah, never came back and did that again. It didn't really fit the way that school teaches. It was something we had asked them for. So I didn't have a good sense of where I was linguistically. And then the test that we took, like we had to self-evaluate as we were taking the test. So we'd say, well, I think I'm here based on these yes, no questions. And then I was taking the test and it said, well, based on your results, you should take the next level of the test. And that kept happening. And I placed considerably higher than I thought that I would. And it was interesting because we came out placing quite differently, even though we'd been in the same class and both felt like we were getting a lot out of the class that we were doing. Right. I mean, like,
yeah, I wasn't surprised at what I wasn't expecting, for example, to be necessarily a full conversational B1 level. I'm not comfortable there yet. but I can read and comprehend some things there. So for me, it was like the affirmation of like, oh, okay, yeah, I'm understanding more of the grammar, but my conversation and putting thoughts and things together wasn't there yet.
But at the same time, we both were getting stuff out of the class that mm-hmm. we had been
totally.
In. Mm-hmm. And so it was interesting how somehow the teacher had been able to interact with us in a way where we were both learning, even though we ended up placing quite differently. So I had the 7 months essentially at the A level, and then I had 1 week in the B level, and then they moved me into the C level, which the scale ends at C2. That was a little surprising to me. And then I had 1 day in C1, and then I got sick, and so I wasn't able to go back the rest of that week. And so I didn't have a good sense of whether that was a good fit or not, and then had a couple of other things happening, and then eventually got back and had just finished a week in C1. And I felt there were moments where I was like, yeah, this is the right class for me because I'm tracking with the conversations and I'm enjoying this. And then other moments where it was like, I have no idea what we're talking about. And they are saying things like, okay, so remember when you learned this in B1? And I'm like, I never took B1. I have no, I never learned that. And they're like, okay, now go ahead and use it here. I'm like, okay, but I don't know it. And so, yeah, I think I went from feeling like, I think with our class that we were having together, I felt like I was often understanding probably 80% roughly of what was happening, to then in the B2 class feeling like I was maybe understanding more like 50%, and then in the C1 class feeling like maybe sometimes it was as little as 20 or 30%. And, you know, by the end of the week, I felt like I was understanding it better. But, you know, kind of there's all of these different pressures happening. Because on the one hand, I want to make sure I'm not in a class that's beyond my level, because that's not actually helpful, right? Like if I need this foundational work, then I don't want to be missing. I don't want to waste a week, both in terms of paying for it, but also in terms of the energy that goes into it. I don't want to waste a week doing something that I'm really not ready for. And at the same time, if I am ready for it, I don't want to not do it. So, yeah.
I think with language, it's that fascinating thing of having, like, it's just so, you just need to use it. You just need to write it, read it, speak it. Like, it's just that muscle that you constantly have to engage with, but your learning process doesn't match your need. You, like, some people learn things faster in different ways. You're like, oh, why don't I have that concept yet? But you have this other one, but they don't always align. And so there's this constant fit and start, like the fits and start of learning of like, oh, I'm getting it. And you're like, no, I'm not. And they just eventually they line up to where you feel like you're that competent human being again. But it's just this constant battle of understanding and then finding another area that you don't understand. And yeah, it finally is making sense why some people are like, no, you just have to start speaking. And then I was like, no, I can't. I don't know what you mean. Like, no, just start saying stuff. And I'm like, okay. Feel like I'm at a little better place with that now, with holding that tension. But it also, yeah, it's a lot of getting over yourself.
Yeah, I think maybe it would be helpful for people to understand when we're talking about levels that there's a Central European standard for language learning that kind of measures what you know at different stages of the language learning process. And it starts with A1, and different schools break it up differently, but the major divisions are A1 and A2, and then B1 and B2, and then C1 and C2. And for most places, by the time you reach B2, you are functionally fluent, which in no way means that you feel fluent in every situation in life, but that you have enough of that foundation of language that you could function in a German workplace, or you could study a little bit beyond B2 is often where they're looking for university study, but that you've reached a level where you can start to function. But just like you were saying, Jenny, that's not the way life works. I mean, I don't walk into the supermarket and say, hey, can we have a B1 conversation right now as I'm checking out?
How about A0? Please just A0. That's all I need right now.
And so life is happening at the speed of normal conversation language around you.
Which is different than even listening to a podcast, right? It's like I can understand things in a podcast that I don't need to know for daily life. And then I get an email asking me to check my the reading on our, what's that thing
electric
called in English?
Meter, yeah.
You know, the question of, can I trust myself to read this in German?
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm trying to, on the one hand, force myself to do that, right? Because if I don't practice reading it in German and only use Google Translate, number one, Google Translate's like, it's a great tool, but it's not always right. But also, if I don't force myself to practice reading it in German, I don't develop that capacity. But at the same time, I feel a little vulnerable, you know, when I get a bill and I only read it in German and interact with it in German, and I don't actually know how accurately I've understood it. That's uncomfortable. I mean, we were looking something up today, trying to figure out, you know, as a team, how do we do something with the internet? And I'm reading it in German, I'm interpreting it, and then offering my interpretation to you guys as though I've read the site in a language I understand, and I don't know if I've actually understood it. You know, it's like very uncomfortable. And yet, if you don't do that and risk those mistakes, then I don't know how you can learn it.
I mean, that's so true with language learning. When we were doing MTI and some of the language learning stuff, they encouraged us to just be careful not to make like really large language mistakes, but you have to make little ones all the time, or mm-hmm. you don't learn. And that's hard. I'm really impressed with the first school that brought you guys both on, challenged you both in very different areas. And even though you didn't have a test that you could say, well, this is where I'm at, both of you continued to grow. And it's almost harder now when you're trying to put that into a class setting, like now you're being put in a C1 class, because that's where they have for you, even though you're saying, I don't know if I know all the B1 and B2 material.
And I know that I haven't been officially introduced to a lot of it. Yeah. I mean, so I asked the teacher one of the days in class, I was just like, okay, I don't know if this is where I should be, because I never had B1. We were doing a project with partners, a lot of pair work in the class that I'm in, that I was in last week, and which is really good because we have different strengths, and so we're able to learn from each other. But I was in the middle of something. I was just like, I just don't know if this is the right place for me and at like the right level for me, because I didn't have a B1 class. And she said, don't pay attention to the levels. That's actually not helpful. I'm listening for whether you understand well enough to know what we're doing, and you do. And so just do it, mm-hmm. you know? And I'm like, okay, but I'm like uncomfortable because I don't know it. And she said, you're like a person who knows how to walk, but doesn't know how muscles work. And I was like, okay, that's an interesting, like, I don't, because sometimes I definitely don't feel like I know how to walk. I feel like I know how to kind of stumble along. And then, but I think the idea was, not knowing how the language works doesn't mean that I don't necessarily know the language. But then also, because I don't always know how the language works, their decisions, like I was talking about with the dog this morning, it's like, I know that it's really complicated to say the sentence in exactly the right way. Whereas if I just spoke about the dog, it would have been fine.
Mm.
But there was this part of me that's like, I'd like to get this right. That's a huge limiter, actually, mm-hmm. for both of us with languages, when we get kind of caught on the wanting to get it right. I mean, that's something we've talked about a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, overthinking a simple thing. You're like, no, just use words. Yeah, we had this funny exchange in our house a few weeks ago. One thing that I haven't done yet is go to a place to get my hair cut, which is generally fine. It doesn't look terrible, but like, I've been wanting to, but feeling the intimidation of having a verbal exchange. It's not like I just walk in, say, cut my hair, and then walk out. It feels like it has to be this exchange. Well, so Stephen and I were talking about this, the kids were around, and we started making fun of ourselves of like, oh, this is what would happen if I said this thing, and then this would happen. And so this was all like a little mini German conversation, and Rosemary pipes up and was like, so it sounds like you would be fine. Like, oh, you're probably right, I could probably do this. It's probably not as big of a deal as I'm making it out to be. But in my head, I've made it into this big exchange, this life or death situation that it really isn't. Really isn't.
I also think that it's such an unnatural way of measuring language capability, mm-hmm. these these tests. And and what it does is it ends up making us evaluate our competency in ways that aren't incredibly natural. And I really value the tests, and I value what they're designed to measure. And I think there's absolutely a place and a time to say, well, let's make sure that you are still learning some of these fundamental blocks of language that you need and you will need moving forward. But where they can become unhelpful is for someone like me, who's very goal oriented, and I'm sticking out this measure, a do or die measure of B2 or B1 competency. And because I always felt my role was demanding a certain level of competency, me not feeling like I was hitting that was just feeding into the feelings of role deprivation that I was already struggling with.
That has been one thing that is just, So I think language, more than anything else, is, and this probably isn't an unusual feeling, but I think language more than anything else is what is feeding my experience of role deprivation. And I think, kind of like you were saying, Mike, when you, your job before you moved here was words, right? And that was largely true for me as well as a professor and as a PhD student, you know, like that was what I just lived in, words and ideas and the expression of them and the evaluation of them. You know, I mean, that's what I did. So I was mentioning on the other podcast last week, this experience where we were talking about things that were in my wheelhouse, right? And I was the least competent at expressing them in my class, even though I probably, based on everybody else's backgrounds, what they've studied and what they're doing, I probably know more about these things than anybody else in my class, and yet came across as the least competent. And that really was hard. And then actually the day after we recorded the podcast, we had a conversation specifically about intercultural competence, in which the teacher of the class was kind of poo-pooing the idea and like talking about how it was kind of a dangerous idea. And I know exactly why she was saying that, and I know exactly how to interact with that in English. But in German, I'm just sitting there like, well, I know what you're saying, and I wish I could talk with you, but I don't know how to say perception. I don't know how to say generalization. I don't know how to say stereotypes. I don't know how to say, I don't know whether it makes sense to say, you know, the tendency is to put these ideas in boxes. I don't know if that concept, you know, translates into German, or if that's just an English way of
they put them in drawers.
In drawers. Oh, so that makes sense. I get it. And I think I could say that, but it, yeah. Schublade, is that the?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, it's
in
like I could.
Schubladen stecken.
I could get there, but I wouldn't have known to start there. And so I think that feeling of like, okay, here's something in which I am uniquely qualified for of anybody in this room, and I am unable to say anything about it. And that actually, like, on the one hand, it's funny, and it was funny to me while it was happening. And on the other hand, it's gutting.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, how long is this going to take?
Yeah.
You know, will I get there? Like, will I, you know, and will it even matter? Will the world have moved on beyond the things that I care about by the time I'm able to say anything about it?
In those moments, I think I was probably close to where you guys were at, where somebody asked me to lead our small group. I mean, time-wise in German, when somebody asked me to lead a small group one night and just stumbling my way through leading it. And we were working our way through the book of Acts, and we came to Stephen's sermon in Acts chapter 7. And he's talking about faith of our fathers, faith of our fathers, faith of our fathers. And of all the questions I had anticipated in my head, the question I hadn't anticipated was, where are all the women? Why are this the no faith of my mothers in this passage?
Mm.
And it was a great question, a question that would have been challenging but fun to interact with in English. And I had no idea where to start with it in German.
Mm-hmm.
Or the time we were outside of Zionskirche, it was a Sunday afternoon. We had just come from leading worship at the church, and I had my guitar, and another one of the workers here was carrying a drum. And this guy came by, and he was like, "Wow, those are really cool instruments," and started talking to us, and found out that we were pastors. And he said, "I've always wanted to ask a pastor this question: what is love?" And you know, in any language, that's going to be an amazing conversation, mm-hmm. if you can get the words out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't know where to start.
Right.
In German. And so, yeah, these are just like, I could put words together.
Yeah.
But to get to thoughts, yeah. and like those kind of open doors in ministry don't come around often. And to be faced with one and to say, I can't put the words together. You're right. These are just gutting situations, and they're discouraging sometimes, because you think, but I've been studying this long and I still can't interact with what I really want to talk about.
Yeah. And then the self-doubt sets in. So even though I'm in this class, so our goal at the end of our first year is to take the B1 test. And it's interesting, because even though I've been placed in the C1 level, there's part of me that just has all this angst about, can I pass the B1 test, you know? And then I have a bad language moment. And, you know, language learning has ups and downs. It just ups and downs, ups and downs, ups and downs.
And we have those ups and downs in English. We just don't tend to beat ourselves up for, you know,
that's
saying
true.
The wrong
days
thing
where you're
to a person.
Much less communicative. Yeah.
Right. Like, yeah. We don't beat ourselves up as much in our native language.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's true. I definitely have had days teaching in English, my own language, you know, where I could not get the ideas to come together. But yeah, I think the discouragement can really set in hard.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this feeling of, like, you know, you're not actually in competition with your colleagues, but there's that feeling. And there's the feeling of, I think... So being in a sustained season of incompetence raises really interesting questions, even about self-worth, but also questions about, for me at least, I've experienced it even in terms of my own spiritual walk, right? Like my own relationship with Jesus, like, has largely been expressed by things that, like, I think the picture I would have is, you know, things that we're doing together, right? So I'm teaching class together with Jesus, if that makes sense, as kind of a word picture for it. But I don't feel that way in language learning, because I'm like, well, he already knows German, you know? and so it feels like this thing where I'm trying to catch up. And I know that these stories in my head are not necessarily helpful, but it feels like it really then impacts even my sense of what does it mean to walk with Christ. And I think there's a way in which that's really good in terms of unlearning walking with Christ being based on productivity. But it's also really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that I've heard anybody talk about language learning hitting in that way. I'm sure people have talked about it and experienced it. I just don't know that it's ever really connected with me before. And I've been thinking about, okay, why do I feel... You know that there are these dry seasons spiritually, or these rough seasons as you go through a cultural transition. I think so that's not unexpected. I think, though, the tie to language was surprising to me, if that makes sense.
You know, I resonate with what you're saying, because for me, what that impacted is not just the relationship with Jesus, but my pastoral work and my preaching was so tied into a gift that I felt that God had given me. And my ability to communicate in that way was me serving him with the gifts that he had given me. And it didn't take long for me to realize that I would not be able to have a command of the German language the way I have a command of English, that the naturalness of allegory, or the naturalness of putting together word pictures and illustrations, was just not as easy. It took, I need other people to help me get there with my German sermons when I preach. And so it had more of a calling impact on me. What am I really called to do? Because the way I pictured my ministry working was me doing what I was doing in the U.S., just right. in a new language.
Yeah, interesting.
And that's not what it is. And God's given me a lot of peace with that, But it's to the point now where getting ready to go on home assignment and knowing that I will be expected to speak in English again, where we've adapted and adopted and changed and morphed our ministry and our calling here in a way where it makes me nervous to think about standing in front and speaking for a long time in English again. I know I'll be able to do it, but that's not where I'm comfortable anymore, like I was a decade ago.
Yeah.
But those are rough lessons to learn in the process too. And that's one of the reasons why we ask people not to get overly involved in ministry during the language learning time.
Right. Well, in part because there's the risk of hiding from the language learning by doing things you feel good at.
And in part because you miss what's changing in you as you're learning about yourself during that time.
Well, I think even language learning is so life consuming. It hits you in so many different areas. And if we get distracted too overly by other work, and not that, I mean, we've done other things, but it's like when the focus shifts, yeah, you just lose that consistency, that train of like paying attention to language in the culture and how they're using it around you when you're too focused on, yeah, work that makes you feel better.
What are some other maybe surprises for you, what you've learned about yourself or learned about the language learning process as you've had to do it from a immersion point of view?
I think something that's surprising to me is how different this immersion experience is than what I had in college. In college, we both studied in Mexico for a while. And
we had 4 weeks of just language.
School.
Cultural learning, yeah.
Which is funny now, thinking how little that actually was.
Yeah.
But I was able to be much more immersed in college because we were dating, but then you left and then I was there for another several months, but obviously we didn't have kids, you know, didn't have a household. And I think I was able to be so much closer to the language. That's something that I felt is not being able to be in a homestay, where I'm, you know, dependent on a daily level on interactions with my hosts and the language I'm trying to learn. I've been surprised how much harder it is because so much larger of a percentage of my day must be done in English. And we're starting to get to the point with the kids where we can do a little bit more in German at home, although they sometimes are very resistant because they're in largely in German.
I mean, they hear it all day.
Yeah,
I mean, that's class. All they're hearing.
And so they get home and they're like, can we not? I mean, that's literally what they say.
And I think part of it in that way is being immersed as a family. You have your family unit. So there's that, the ease of turning inward, but it's like, because we're also learning culture, friendships are more challenging. And so it's like, oh, when you don't feel like you understand language, what does it mean then to make a friend? Or, you know, we've had a few that have seemed like more possibilities. We're like, oh, how long does it take? And what does reciprocal relationship look like to then be able to move into like easy conversations with either a native speaker or someone who knows German well or whatever, or maybe that's our only shared language. How do you move into that naturally? Like, I feel like that's been surprising. I think that's been something that's been surprising.
One of the things that's been interesting to me is I feel like I've been able to have some really good conversations in German, particularly with my teachers and around subjects that I care about. And that's been a lot of fun. And so I think, even though a lot of what I'm experience is kind of this discouragement or this big question of, you know, yeah, am I any good at it or am I going to be any good at it? There are also moments where it's like, yeah, this is fun. And I want to keep learning it. And I want to be able to have the rest of this conversation that I'm able to have half of right now.
I think you guys are doing great. I mean, really, you haven't been here studying German in this is our first time working with people learning from the Envision side, where you have a year of focused language study. Mm-hmm. And again, it's not a comparison with how other people are doing, but where you're at in a year is really, you should be really encouraged about how much you've picked up in a year and how much you've learned, and you're doing well.
Thanks.
but I think that's the measuring stick is always our level of competency in our primary language. Mm-hmm. And sometimes mm-hmm. that's just an unfair measuring stick for us mm-hmm. to have us for ourselves. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, and even recognizing, you know, for me personally, I'm not necessarily the one to get up and speak and use words in a very grammatically correct way anyways, but I'm comfortable doing it. I'll just, you know, I can mm-hmm. in it. So it's like a whole different level when you're trying to just say things in another language. Like, oh, I'll know that I've mastered my way of speaking when I can also do that in German and
when
people can
when you're just as awkward
me.
In German as you are in
yeah,
English.
Yeah, and people are like, oh, I get what you're saying. So when that, rather than the strange, funny look that people are like, what? Yeah, I've still gotten some of that.
But guys, good. Thanks for, again, spending a good amount of time with us and sharing where you're at in the journey.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. It's good to talk about.
Hopefully there'll be people who down the road will listen to it and say, oh man, I can so identify with that because that's right where I'm at. I know that's our hope for a lot of the series that we're doing with you guys.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us today on Tracks Cultures. If you enjoyed our conversation and want to dive deeper, we invite you to join our community on Discord. It's a space for sharing experiences, asking questions, and connecting with others who are navigating similar journeys. See the link in our show notes to become part of our growing community. Your support means the world to us. And if you'd like to help us continue our work as a creative community looking for the meeting place of faith, art, and culture, consider becoming a patron. Visit patreon.com/envisionberlin to find out how you can contribute. Until next time, keep embracing change and embodying transformative hope for humanity.